Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Podcast, and we have a great guest coming up for you in this 932B podcast. That is, we're talking to Dr. Scott Litofsky, who is the chair of the Division of Neurologic Surgery at the University of Missouri Health School of Medicine in Columbia, Missouri. And welcome, Dr. Litofsky.
Thank you. Good morning.
And the point we're going to discuss is something about glioblastoma. Glioblastoma is the brain cancer that killed one of my heroes, if you will, John McCain. And we're talking about the addition of some supplements to it, and you've done some unique studies on that. But before we get to it, let's talk about how one gets to be a neurosurgeon. So you went through medical school, and where'd you go?
I went to University of Texas Medical School in Houston.
And then you did a internship in general surgery, I take it. Where was that?
And that was at University of Southern California, Los Angeles County Medical Center.
Which is one of, if not the largest, and has trained probably more physicians than anyone else.
I think they say about 1% of physicians wind up going through there.
And then you did a neurologic surgery. Did you go right to neurologic surgery, or did you complete the surgery residency first?
If the internship is part of the neurosurgery program, and it was in the same place.
And then you did neurologic surgery, and then you got somehow to the University of Missouri, and now you're doing work on glioblastoma, which is something you probably operate on as well. Is that right?
That's correct.
So talk to us a little bit more about glioblastoma and why there's such a bad tumor.
So glioblastoma is a tumor that originates in the brain, and it is very aggressive. It will grow between brain cells throughout the brain. Fortunately, it doesn't go to other parts of the body, but because there's not room within the confines of the skull for the tumor to expand, it can make patients very sick. And usually, despite whatever we do, the vast majority of patients will die from the disease. Over time, people have been doing better and better, but still not even half of the patients will live a couple of years after their diagnosis. So it's a pretty aggressive type of tumor.
And you said that with new therapies, that is with the current therapies, people are living longer. So I think you told me, the written program was that now patients are living on average how long?
So with all of the various treatments that are available, and there's a number of different ones which include surgery, chemotherapy, radiation therapy, something called electric field therapy, about 48% will live about 2 years.
So it's a little less than 2 years on average, but that's expanded from less than a year, less than actually 9 months, just a few years ago with some new treatment. So the standard chemotherapy is what now?
The standard chemotherapy is an agent called temozolomide, which is an oral agent that's very well tolerated. It's usually given with radiation therapy at a low dose, and then once the radiation therapy is completed, then we increase the dose, but we only give the drug 5 days out of each month.
And how does the drug work? It's a tolazolamide, so it's a small molecule that must get across the blood-brain barrier. Does it work on the immune system, or what does it do?
No, it's actually an agent that will affect the DNA in the cells. So it's not an immune therapy. It works through.
Well, it it works directly on the DNA, I guess. It's a direct chemotherapy agent.
I believe it's an alkylating agent.
And alkylating means it is one of the things that essentially destroys the tumor. And one of the problems with that we've had some great success with other solid tumors is we've been able to give immune therapy agents that help by blocking the ability of the cancer cell to block your normal immune cells. You can't do that in the brain because it's a protected region, I would guess. But you've come up with some.
That's one of the theories. There are some immune therapies that are being developed, but they're still in developmental phases.
So you came up with something new, and tell us about that and what the studies are.
Sure. So actually, I didn't originally come up with this idea. This work actually originated with at that time a high school student that had received a grant from an organization called Stand Up to Cancer. Her name is Macy Williams. And so she had approached us to be able to do some work in our laboratory, and she wanted to look at these antioxidant medications, which are these over-the-counter medications. And so she did a little work with us, and then she finished high school and went off to college, but we continued to do some work on what she had originally started with us. And so what we did was we looked at three over-the-counter drugs. So these are things you can get at the health store or maybe even the regular drugstore, something called vitamin D3, something called melatonin, and something called alpha-lipoic acid. And what we wanted to do was to see if these drugs had an effect when we use them in conjunction with the temozolomide on cells, glioblastoma cells that we had growing in a test tube. And so what we did is we treated the glioblastoma cells with the temozolomide by itself, and then we treated the glioblastoma cells with the temozolomide and added one of the antioxidant drugs. And we found basically that the antioxidants and the temozolomide combination killed more cells than the temozolomide alone did. We found that alpha-lipoic acid was the best of the three agents. And we tried to use doses in the test tube that would be comparable to what a person would have in their bloodstream if they were able to take the medications themselves.
And so the doses are the same. So now you see patients with glioblastoma. Have you started to recommend, or have you started to do a study in humans saying, let's try alpha-lipoic acid? Or and by the way, let me go back and before I ask that question, simpler question is, have you combined these agents, that is vitamin D plus alpha-lipoic plus melatonin, or is that study still remain to be done?
Well, so the reason that combining them, we haven't done that, is because they all work through essentially the same mechanism, as far as we're able to tell. At least, you know, in the basic mechanisms are fairly similar for them. We still have some work to do about identifying the specific pathways that are occurring, and we haven't done studies that are more advanced than just looking at their effects on growth. So there's a number of other things that we need to be looking at, like their effects on how the cells invade through tissue and whether those things actually affect in laboratory models what animal survival would be like or things like that. That wouldn't necessarily stop us from recommending these as an adjunct because they don't appear to be harmful to patients. And so they may help the patients do better, but we haven't gone to the point where we've done controlled studies looking at that particular issue.
And now, do you give these to patients at all? Do you, I mean, anecdotally, patients must ask, is there anything else I can do, doc?
It's certainly something that that can be suggested to folks. And when they ask, you know, well, is there anything special I could eat? This would be something that would be reasonable to do. But we don't have any data yet about what that effects would be like.
And obviously, that's a fairly tough study to do in humans because you've got to get enough patients to be able to show an effect and got to be able to randomize them. So you take this and you take this other pill that looks the same but doesn't have any active ingredient in it.
That would be the case, yeah.
Now, where are we in, if you will, let's go back, if I can drop back just a second to ask about, there are stages of glioblastoma. So were these cells in a highly, if you will, cancerous form or highly malignant, or were these a less malignant stage, and how does that and how does the different stages in glioblastoma matter to patient survival?
So glioblastoma is really the most aggressive grade of the tumor that there is. There are lower grade types of tumors that wouldn't actually be called glioblastoma. They would have some similarities, but they would be something that would be called like astrocytoma or anaplastic astrocytoma. But glioblastoma is the most aggressive form of those types of tumors. There are some new studies looking at the genetic makeup of glioblastomas, and there are some glioblastomas that have some more favorable characteristics than others. In the work that we did, we used a cell line from a patient of mine, and we also used a cell line that was purchased from a repository of various types of tumors. So it's a cell line that's available widely called U87, both of which grow very aggressively in the test tube and in animal models, so they're very aggressive tumors.
And both of which did both of which show a similar or at least qualitatively in the direction similar response to the addition of alpha lipoic acid to these?
Yes, they did. They both had a response. So one of the things we need to do is expand what we're looking at. So we have tissue on a number of patients that I've taken care of that we have available to grow in culture, and we can pull those out and test the effects. We can look at some other parameters of tumor behavior to see if there's effects with regard to those as well. And then expand the work to include some animal models so that we can be more confident that this is really going to make a difference for patients.
Anything else we should know about? People always ask, should I get a brain scan routinely or an MRI routinely every whatever it is, 5 years or 2 years or whenever I should do this? Will this pick up tumors at an earlier stage that I could get operated upon and thus not have the disease? That is, when people come to our executive health program at the Cleveland Clinic, they often ask about total body MRIs. What's the status of a brain MRI as a screening test?
Well, fortunately, glioblastoma is relatively uncommon enough that it's not going to be most people aren't going to have something like that. And so from a, you know, we're living in a time where our resources are somewhat limited. And so from a cost perspective, getting a screening MRI probably would not have a yield that would be beneficial for the vast majority of people. And so that's not something that we would recommend as a kind of routine health maintenance practice for patients, because it's such an uncommon disease.
And if you were going to talk about the future of brain cancer and of glioblastoma, because that's the field you're in, and obviously you probably know more about this than almost all of us. Tell us, is our brain cancers increasing in frequency, decreasing in frequency, and what would you predict 10 years out?
So there is a sense that brain cancer is increasing in frequency. It tends to be more common in older people, and our population is aging. And so just because of the population demographics that we have, we're more likely to see more cases. It's also we have more patients that are getting MRIs, and MRIs are becoming increasingly sensitive to changes that are occurring. The quality of the imaging is better, and so we're catching more tumors because we're getting more studies on people for other reasons frequently. And so whether there is a true increase in the number of cases or it's a result of these other kinds of things, it's hard to say for sure, although there is a sense that the frequency is somewhat increased. I think that as, you know, we look 10 years down the road, we'll probably continue to see that that there will be an increasing incidence of these things. We don't know if there are environmental exposures that are responsible for them, and it may be that we discover some of those kinds of things down the road. It's really hard to know for sure, because most of the studies looking at those epidemiological causes over the years have really not been very fruitful for identifying specific factors that cause the disease.
I want to thank you very much for giving us such a excellent summary of brain cancer and the status of using antioxidants as an adjunct that may help. We've been talking with Dr. Scott Lutofsky, who's chair of the Division of Neurologic Surgery at the University of Missouri Health School of Medicine in Columbia, Missouri. Thanks very much. You've been listening to podcast 932B, You, the Owner's Manual, How You Can Live at the Top of Your Curve Till Very Near the End. And Darren, thanks very much for great engineering, but especially you, the listeners, 50-some thousand of you can't be wrong. Hopefully, and we'll be back next week with another great interview. To remind you, last week we had Megan Cox-Gurdon, author of The Enchanted Hour, The Miraculous Period of Reading Aloud in an Age of Discrimination, on the B segment. The B segment is always a guest, as was Christy Brissett in 930B, Coming to Your Grocery Store, What's New? And probably a great interview also from 929B, Dr. Leo Trasand, talking about sicker, fatter, poorer, how hormone-disrupting chemicals are invading your food supply and what to do in your environment, what to do about that in avoiding it. This is Dr. Mike Roizen. Remember the A segments, always the latest medical news of the week and what to do, what it means for you on what to do when to live at the top of your curve. We'll be back next week with another A and B. In the meantime, if you hadn't downloaded the A segment, do. It's only a 10 to 15 minute segment on the news of the week, the latest news of the week, and there's some really important news this week, and what you can do and what it means for you and what you can do to stay younger longer. Thanks again.